The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
Support for this show comes from InterVarsity Press and their new book, Hurting Yet Whole, by Luan Huska. Speaking from the author's own experience with chronic pain, this book helps us redefine what it means to find healing and wholeness, even in the midst of ongoing suffering. Learn more about the book and get your copy of Hurting Yet Whole at ivpress.com. From Spirituality and Health Magazine, I'm Rabbi Rami, and this is Essential Conversations. Our guest today, Robin Moreno, is a certified yoga teacher, trained life coach, Emmy-nominated TV host, and practicing curandera, a Mexican folk healer. She's the author of three books, Practically Posh, Smart Girl's Guide to a Glam Life, Suave, the Latin Male, and Borderline Personalities, a New Generation of Latinas, Dish on Sex, Sass, and Cultural Shifting. Her next book, Get Rooted, is due out in 2022, and that focuses on her work as a curandera, as a healer. I don't see how the other books fit into the new books, but we're going to find out in just a moment. She's also spoken at the Obama White House, Sundance Film Festival, and South by Southwest Interactive. Our conversation is going to focus on her work as a healer. And Robin Moreno, welcome to Essential Conversations.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are welcome. I'm very interested in what we're going to be talking about. But I got to ask you, how did you get from the Latin male and Latina's dish on sex, sass, and cultural shifting to the work you're doing as a healer?
Well, you know, it might sound super disparate, but it is a part of a journey of being really a storyteller. So first and foremost, I am a curandera, which is called a Mexican folk healer. Traditionally, that's the sort of translation. But, you know, there's different ways to heal. There's just different modalities. Somebody might be a curandera that is an herbalist, or somebody might be a curandera that's a masseuse, or a curandera that like is a midwife. And so I believe that my biggest gift is that of storytelling. And so I just didn't know that I had been on the path for a long time. I was in women's magazines and a journalist for a long time, and always really a lot worked in the Latinx space, really interested in identity, but also lifestyle, health and wellness, which I think does all converge. But it really wasn't until I had what I would consider maybe a personal spirit crisis of spirit that healing and wellness really became centered for me.
And the crisis in spirit was?
You know, I was just burnt out. I mean, I guess that sounds dramatic, right? I had a crisis of spirit, but, you know, it was deeper than a burnout, right? So a lot of people that might be listening could understand it. In a way, it looked very sort of like a rom-com, right? It was like, cool woman with little kids is, you know, trying to do it all. And I was running an organization that was a Latina media company. I live outside of New York City, so I was commuting 4 hours in one day. I would wake up, I would get my kids ready, grab my coffee, you know, get in the car, throw them off at daycare, run in high heels, throw myself in the train, end up, you know, in the bustling city of Manhattan and work like a maniac, and then go home, try to make it home for bedtime, didn't always make it, and was really doing that thing where I was really busy, I was overwhelmed, I wasn't really centering health and wellness, even though in my background, I am a yoga teacher, and, you know, have Reiki certifications and things like that. It was like, I was so busy, I was forgetting all the important things. And I just started to get like, just, I don't know, more stressed and more stretched thin to the point that I just didn't feel good. And I call it a crisis of spirit because underneath all of that, because that's very relatable, right? Just someone that's just trying to do it all and not really striking a good work-life balance. I just had a lot of personal things in my life, like close family members were struggling. I think was struggling emotionally. And even though I had grown up in the Catholic Church, I had moved away from traditional Catholicism and maybe kind of gone to more like Eastern ways, like meditation, but still was feeling just lost. Like if you just asked me, you know, in the midst of all this busyness, how do you feel? I still felt really lost. And so this lostness, I guess a dark night of the soul kind of thing, really put me on the path.
And the path is very different than the path you are on. I mean, I'm getting exhausted just listening to you getting up early in the morning and, you know, running to work and coming back late and all of that. You really did switch everything around to take up this path of a healer. How much do you think the healing path, not your personal experience with it, but the, in general, how much of it is antithetical to the modern lifestyle?
Well, you know, it's very antithetical, right? And what happened is, say we're talking about paths, right? So if we have the image, when you were talking, I really had an image of like a diverging path, right? I'd say that I was on a path of busy ambition, right? Ambition, achievement, busy. And I was on this path and I was running, right? And I did a lot of things. You know, you gave me a very glowing bio at the beginning, which I earned and I'm super proud of. But it was kind of like this boss life, right? Like I was bossing and I was running. And so what happened is because if you stay with the metaphor, I say fell, right? I fell, right? I found myself on the, you know, on the path, you know, I decided I need to slow down, right? Like, I was a real conscious, like, this is not working for me. Like I need to get off this path because this path is not healthy. This path is not making me happy. This path is actually, I'm sad. Like I'm actually fundamentally, weirdly, even though so many things were really, really, really good, I still felt that there was something missing. And I couldn't ignore it. I just could not ignore that. And so I had to consciously choose to say, crawl to this other way, right? Towards the light, whatever metaphors we use, right? And it's so important because we don't live in a society that honors that. We don't honor slowing down. We don't honor switching gears. We don't honor being lost. The first question people ask you is, what do you do? Right? Like, right. When you set me up, you show what I've done. Quote, right. You know, that's mm-hmm. just how we work. Right. But it was about not doing. And it was about like really not doing and actually going back and trying to maybe even undo some things that had been done a long time ago. And so what called to me to, because I did have a calling, is I was called to begin to study an earth-based wisdom tradition that my great-grandmother had actually practiced. It's called Curanderismo. It's a Mesoamerican 500-year-old wisdom tradition that talks about balance and that talks about, you know, connection with the earth and connection with self and connection with people. And I had always known about my grandmother, but I just didn't value or pay attention until I almost did every other thing, right? Like yoga and life coaching and Reiki and 8-day silent, you know, retreats. And it just wasn't working. And I then began to hear this call, you know, this really call. And that's when I got lured onto this, what you would call, I guess, this other path of healing. And I became a healer because I needed to heal myself.
Right, which is true for lots of people. I'm thinking that a lot of people who are in high pressure jobs, who are, you know, on that racing lifestyle path, you know, they do yoga, they go on retreats, they all in an attempt to moderate the stress so they can keep doing what they're doing. But not have it be as unhealthy as it could be. But when you're talking about, you know, your great-grandmother, she didn't live that lifestyle. I mean, she wasn't putting on high heels and racing to the subway. That wasn't her experience. How much of this healing work depends on the kind of lifestyle that was lived several generations ago? And how difficult is it to bring that into the 21st century?
So I think that's a beautiful and astute point. And I think that it's really true, right? And so there's a difference. And I think I should state it now, right? I was one of those women, right? Like I was one of those women that like kind of worked hard, played hard, you know, would work, you know, intensely. And then, yeah, okay, I'm going to go to Tulum for 5 days and do like a yoga retreat and come back and feel really good. There's nothing wrong with that. That's super awesome. But mine was deeper. It was a little deeper. And honestly, it was a little bit darker because there was a reason. That's the thing, right? When you dig a little deep, it's like, you know, okay, what's really going on here? The reason I was on this path is because I had this unresolved childhood trauma that I had never dealt with. And so I was looking for other things to make me feel good and valued. And so when I went on this path, it wasn't just about relaxation or breathing, although those are portals and those are important. It was like I actually had an unresolved trauma that I needed to really deal with. And I've been looking outside myself. Everything was always outside of myself. The achievement was outside of myself. The worth was outside of myself. And even the methodologies to fix this thing was outside of myself. Or these, you know, they weren't necessarily mine, even though you can certainly appreciate yoga and all of these things, which I really truly do. But there was something much deeper and different than when I realized that I was sitting on my own gold, so to speak. And I began to follow the thread, or maybe like the crumbs that my grandma had left for me. That's my great grandmother. That's how I felt. I was like, huh, this feels different. And so when I started studying curanderismo, I did start to heal myself. I did start to slow down. I did start to learn plant medicine. I did start to learn, you know, or really merge like things that I'd learned, like breath work and healing and energy work. But it was also a reclaiming. It was a reclaiming of old ways, right? Old traditions, old medicines, and old ways of being, which include slowing down, which include being present, which include like not having necessarily an agenda. And for someone who's always had goals and agendas, that was revolutionary.
So let me ask you if you can tell us a little bit about this childhood trauma that you were carrying around. And also how curanderismo, I don't know if you want to say healed, but helped you deal with that.
Yeah, no, it really did. It really, really did. And maybe this can, hopefully other people can relate to this. So when I was 13 years old, my dad died of pancreatic cancer, and he died really fast because pancreatic cancer is a very late stage diagnosed cancer. So by the time you have the symptoms, it's really far gone. And so what had happened is, bless his heart, he was like having a lot of stomach issues and was losing weight, couldn't figure it out. And they misdiagnosed it for, I would say, for a few months. And then they went in and figured out what it was and was like, oh my gosh, like it's probably like a doctor's nightmare, right? It's a nightmare just across the board. And so they didn't tell my dad that he was terminal. They told my mom. I think they wanted to maybe give him hope. And so they went to my mom and said, your husband has less than 1 year to live. Like, we give him a year. And my mom was just, I can't even imagine getting that news, right? Like, she has four kids. She's 40. Her husband's 46. Like, it was just, it's unfathomable. And he died 9 months later, 260 days later. And we didn't have the cultural, or maybe I would say it was culture. We just didn't have the resources to say, oh, you should go to therapy. You should go to like grief counseling. Like, we didn't know how to do that. My mom just didn't know how to do that. And so, what we did is we like wore black and went to school and just moved on. And we like, you know, we survived. Right. And my mom worked really hard and she had, she hustled. She was a single mom with four flipping kids. And so the consequence of that is that I then began to achieve and to try to be really good. I didn't want to give my mom any trouble because she was sad. She was busy. And so I really, I assumed this identity and really solidified an identity of being self-driven, of being really motivated, of achieving, because it would make my mom happy and I would get outward approval. And so I did these things. And I was also honestly, like, I was a good kid. I was smart, you know, I was lucky. It's just that these survival skills worked for a long time until they didn't. And so what happened is when I got older and I was having, you know, whatever, burnout, midlife crisis, whatever one would call it, I started studying curanderismo and I was reading a book. And there's not really, weirdly, a lot of books on curanderismo. A lot of them are very like anthropological or sociological. They're like academic and they're not really fun to read. But there was one great book called Woman Who Glows in the Dark. And it was about this Mexican-American nurse who became a curandera, and she tells it in a really nice narrative. And in this book, she talks about this condition called susto, that's S-U-S-T-O, and it's soul loss. And she defined it and she said, you know, you have this thing called the soul loss. Something happens to you and your soul either leaves or it freezes because you're traumatized. It's like post-traumatic stress disorder, right? And so I realized that's it. Like, and she goes, and you feel like incomplete and you feel like no matter what you do, something's missing. And I had always felt like that, but I kept trying to fill it with like achievement or, you know, I was always a seeker. Like I had 2 yoga certifications. I did a life coach training. I went on 8-day silent retreats. Like I did Landmark 4. I'm like, I did ayahuasca. Like I was looking, but it didn't ever fill. But when I saw susto, I was like, that's it. That's what I have. I have susto. You know? And so the way that you cure a soul loss is you do soul retrieval. You call yourself back, right? You go back to like that 13-year-old kid who froze when her dad died, and you work with that and you call yourself back and you begin to have more of a sense of completion. And so through curanderismo, I did make my way back, but also studying curanderismo was a soul retrieval because this was my ancient medicine that I had really discarded because I, for the name of assimilation and wanting to fit in, you know, my family, even though my great grandmother was a curandera, my grandma wasn't, my mom wasn't, my aunts couldn't tell you anything about it. I don't even really speak great Spanish. And this is a process that people can relate to. As you become assimilated, you leave things. Your family sacrifices things because they want you to achieve, to fit in, to be better. But there's a consequence to the sacrifice. And so I was like, and part of this soul retrieval was reclaiming this medicine. And it has been beautiful.
So Robin, let me ask you a couple of questions about that.
Sure.
So your dad gets sick.
Yes.
We're talking great-grandmother was a healer, mm-hmm. a curandera. And then her daughter had no connection to it. Her granddaughter had no connection to it. So nobody thought to have your dad see a healer, right? Other than Western medicine.
No. So you know what had happened, which is, again, this is part of it, is that, so, well, this is also interesting. So my great-grandmother actually had my grandfather. And so and I don't know because he's passed away. So I have never asked him if he was just not interested or what was happening. But apparently he was not interested in curanderismo, right? Even though his mom was, like his mom must have done these things, right? Like rub eggs and rub, you know, all of these things. And so he knew, but I think part of his assimilation is that he just thought that was old fashioned and he wanted just to be really Americanized, right? And so what also happened is that religion is different, right? Curanderismo it's not really a religion. It's a wisdom tradition. You know, it's spiritual. It's very spiritual. Curanderas believe that we work with spirit. It's not me doing it. Spirit's working through me. Right? So there's a real big sense of spirit, but it's not an organized religion. And so I think what happens in modern society is that people move towards whatever it is, you know, I don't know, Christianity or Catholicism, or I can't speak to Judaism, and they move away from what they think is, I don't even know. I mean, I don't, witchcraft or something. And so when my dad was sick, what they did is they prayed. And I really do believe in the power of prayer. I'm a big believer in prayer. But to my knowledge, they did not try to do anything with curanderismo.
I just want to take a moment and thank our sponsor, InterVarsity Press, and their new book, Hurting Yet Whole by Leon Huska, for supporting this episode of Essential Conversations. Speaking from the author's own experience with chronic pain, this book helps us redefine what it means to find healing and wholeness, even in the midst of ongoing suffering. Learn more about the book and get your copy of Hurting Yet Whole at ivpress.com. So, given that, you mentioned that, you know, for you, it was like reclaiming old ways.
Yeah.
And I may be just sort of romanticizing this.
Sure.
But I have a feeling that your susto, right, your soul loss,
yeah,
was part of being in this lineage that was broken.
Yeah.
You know, your great grandmother had it and then no one else did. And so you eventually inherited this soul loss. You lost your real, not just your personal soul, but your, I don't know, what would we say? Your
like
Mexican
ancestral
soul.
Ancestral, like
right?
Yeah.
And so now you're reclaiming that by becoming this healer. How much of this, when you do the healing work or when you were training to do the healing work, do you have a sense that you are tapping into / channeling generations that had gone silent because your grandfather wasn't interested in his mother's healing work?
You're completely right. And there's been, I have had spiritual instances where I have felt presences and I have felt like communing with my grandmother. I have an altar, and in Spanish, another word for altar is a mesa, and that means a table. And the idea is you set up the table so your ancestors can come be with you and talk to you, right? And so, like, if you can imagine, like, the metaphorical table, like, right, we're going to break bread and we're going to talk. And so I have an altar that I have pictures of my great grandmother. Her name's Mama Natalia. I have pictures of my dad. I have pictures of the ancient ones. And I ask them to call me. I ask them to come in. I call on them. I meditate and I ask them to come be with me. And so it is part of the work. And I think that was a very astute, and I really felt that in my body when you talked about, you know, this, an ancestral sustal, because I think that you're exactly right. I think that there, and generationally, so much has been lost with different cultures, right? And I felt that deeply. What I thought was, you know, just a burnout was much, much deeper. I was missing my people. I was missing my medicine. I was missing my voice. I was missing my name. I was missing, like, my truth. I was missing my story. And I'm a storyteller, you know, and I didn't have all the stories.
Yeah. That's what was coming to me while you were talking about that. We're going to have to wrap this up in a couple of minutes. And I have one serious question to ask you in order to do that. But before I ask you that question, you mentioned something that if I let it go by, people are gonna go, what was she talking about? Rub eggs?
What does that mean? Yes. So that's, thank you. I sometimes assume people know what I'm talking about. And so a lot of work that I do is energy clearing. And so a tool that I use a lot of fresh herbs. So say you came to see me, or someone, this is very common, someone will come to see me and they could have had a bad day. They could have had a really weird interaction. They could have had a breakup. They could have lost their job. They're ready for a transition or change. And so I move energy at what I call, like, moving the winds, right? Like, I'm blowing the winds. I'm moving things. And so one tool that I use a lot is an egg. An egg is considered a wind energy because there's a space between the shell and the yolk.
Then what do you do with the egg?
Well, you could open it and you could read it, which people do. And that's a whole other thing. But also, I just tell people to bury it.
Okay. You don't eat it.
No. That's exactly what you don't do, is you don't
that's
eat
right.
it.
That's right. You just collected all that negativity and then you make an omelet out of it.
No, yeah. No. You go and you bury it.
All right, let me ask you my last question,
because
we're doing this interview in the middle of this pandemic, and you're doing all this healing work. And I'm curious, in the things you've written that I've read, you talk about four paths to being rooted. You know, one of them is don't live in your head, get your emotions out of your body is number two, having a sense of community. And, mm-hmm. and I imagine that means more than just Facebook friends, but maybe even this lineage community, because I think so many people have been cut off from their lineages the way you were. And then the notion of God and nature, not this necessarily supernatural God, but some other earth honoring understanding of deity. How would you take those and apply it to people who say, look, I am suffering great trauma because it's in the ether. It's just in the cultural atmosphere. So if someone comes to you with that, or just knowing that our listeners may be suffering from that, what can you offer the people who are listening, something simple they might be able to do, even if it's, you know, rubbing an egg over their friend?
Well, the egg works. But, you know, the Aztecs, they had a saying, right? It was a saying that we would use, like something sort of like a pithy thing. But what they said is that the world is slippery slick, right? That it was a slippery place. It was a place that you could, you know, be walking and you could be good and be happy. And then a pandemic comes and boom, like you slip and you fall, right? And so we know this to be true. Like the world can be slippery. Things happen. They do, right? But the good news is that there was an antidote to that. And that was a Nahuatl word. It's Nahua. That's called Nitzlitzli. And that meant to be well-rooted. And so, like you said, they had four paths to being well-rooted. And you said them, and they're all great because they're all super accessible. So like you said, the first one is being in your body, not being in your head, right? Like not over-worried or over-anxious, but, you know, exercising, literally exercising, moving, dancing, getting a massage, something that brings you back into your body. That helps ground you and root you. Because if you think, we talked about Sustho, when you fly away with trauma, you're gone, right? You're it's an out of body experience. You're not there. So what you want to do is you want to really be in your body, right? So just say you choose to exercise. Another one is that emotional, when you're imbalanced and you're too overstressed or you're screwed, like doom scrolling, or you're reading too much news, stop that. And I tell my clients over and out. So anytime you're feeling overwhelmed, overstressed, over anxious, get that emotion out of your body, feel it, but move it. And so through the out breath, through journaling, I think is really good. You know, the third path to rootedness was connection, was community. And I think that it's important to remember in this right now, we're really disconnected, right? We can't touch people. We can't see people. We can't go. We have to be 6 feet apart and da, da, da. We're feeling very disconnected. You know, one of the root words of community is the word common. And what common means is that we're in right relation with each other. That means that I help you and I also allow myself to be helped. And I think that not enough people ask for help, especially leaders, especially women who are used to caring a lot. They're not used to asking for help because maybe they're seeing people, they have it worse, right? You know, they think, oh, someone else has COVID and they lost their job and I'm good over here, but they're very overburdened with just stress or kids or life. And so they don't dare ask for help. Ask for the help. Ask for the help that you need because it's super important. And the last path was nature. It was the Aztecs, they worshiped the sun and the moon and the wind, and that was spirit. And so taking a walk, opening a window, watering your plants, whatever you can do to access nature, it's an instant connection and portal to the divine.
Okay, so if people aren't locked in their homes, maybe they can do some of these. Yeah, go out and take a walk. All right, this has really been fascinating. Our guest today was Robin Moreno. You can learn more about her work at her website, robinmoreno.com. Robin, thanks so much for talking with us on Essential Conversations.
This was really fun. Thank you so much.
Essential Conversations with Rabbi Rami is the bi-weekly podcast of Spirituality and Health magazine. If you like Essential Conversations, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast app. You can also follow me on Spirituality and Health's website, where I now write a regular column called Roadside Musings. And don't forget to subscribe to the print magazine as well. Support for this show comes from InterVarsity Press and their new book, Hurting Yet Whole, by Luan Huska. Speaking from the author's own experience with chronic pain, this book helps us redefine what it means to find healing and wholeness, even in the midst of ongoing suffering. Learn more about the book and get your copy of Hurting Yet Whole at ivpress.com. Essential Conversations is produced by Ezra Baker Truppiano, and our executive producer is Catherine Drury Wagner. I'm Rabbi Rami. Thanks for listening.